Caisleen Matthews is a Celtic scholar and storyteller who's fascinated by myths of lost paradise. She says there's a good reason these stories exist in every culture. They reflect our deepest yearnings. And Caisleen Matthews thinks we can actually enter paradise, if we're willing to make the journey.
Why do you think the myth of a lost paradise is, I guess, such a potent and such a pervasive story in so many different cultures?
Well, I think certainly in the West that for us, one of the underlying stories that really hits sort of the major three traditions is the fall from grace, as it is called, or the casting out from the Garden of Eden. And of course, because of the history of Christianity in the West, it has another little sort of turn in the tale, because it tells us that once everything was perfect and that we, humanity, made it so that it was no longer perfect and that we were cast out as a result of that. So there's this sense of sin and guilt and so on, which is all wound up with this story. And so the sense of wanting to return to paradise is wanting to return to the sense of wonder and of joy and of wholeness which we've lost.
The Garden of Eden story is such a problematic one for us, as you point out, because it involves sin and guilt and the feeling that we humans did something terribly wrong to have been booted out of paradise. Are there other stories of lost paradises that don't have such a heavy overlay of sin and guilt?
Well, I think there are sort of hidden and woven within our traditions. We have quite a few. I suppose one of the most potent stories that we have in the West is the Grail story. There are very many different versions, but the roots of that lie back in the sort of the Celtic other world. And in the other world, there are these cauldrons and other vessels or fountains that bring healing and grace and harmony back to the world.
I guess that gets us to the question of what this paradise is that we tell so many stories about. I mean, it's more than a place. It's an inner state, a way of existing in the world.
Yeah, it seems to be a dimension that we carry within us and which is not lost. For example, I have a shamanic practice here in Oxford, and when I'm teaching people to journey, to actually enter into the other world, one of the first things that people find is that place of paradise. And nearly every first journey, every first entry into that other world that people take is accompanied by tears of recognition and joy. So I find that very interesting, that the places that we think we've lost, we haven't lost, that they are inner states of completion and wholeness, and that what we are suffering from within our everyday world is a state of duality, that we are fallen out of wholeness with the rest of the universe, that we're somehow separate from it.
Tell me a bit more about your shamanic practice. I mean, how do you help people find this other world inside themselves? The paradise that they've dreamed of?
Well, I do two things in my practice, one of which is to see people whose story is fractured or broken. So very similar, I suppose, to our story of Eden, that there's a relationship that people have been locked out of. There's been some disruption of things that have not been able to be cleared or healed by medical science or by psychology. So what I'm looking at is bringing things back into a state of spiritual wholeness again. So that's sort of one part of my work. And that's accomplished by journeying into the other world and meeting the inhabitants there, the spirits of the other world.
But tell me more about that, because that's such an alien idea to most people, the idea that you can journey to another world.
Well, what do we do when we pray and when we meditate? And of course, we're very used to entering our dreams. What are we doing when we're dreaming? Some dreams are, of course, digestive dreams of the day that's just gone round, little chewings up of the day. But sometimes we have those big dreams, those dreams where we're full of wonder, dreams when we fly, dreams when we encounter people who are no longer with us in this world, for example, loved relatives or pets. So we're working outside of time when we enter into the other world. And I think everyone is at least used to their dreaming. What is happening is our soul is leaving our body, or part of our soul is leaving our body and actually journeying into another dimension. It's not a place and it's not bounded by time. And when people journey, it's a very similar experience, except that, of course, it's under more controlled circumstances and usually with a quest in mind, a question that you're pondering upon so that the journey responds to that.
Do you remember your first journey and where did you go?
My first journey, in a formal sense, because I think I've always, every time I sing, that's what happens. I am transported on sound into another place. But formally, actually doing it with a real conscious sense, I was taken to the most beautiful primordial tree, the tree of trees, that's the only way I can describe it, a tree of chiming, a tree of singing, and under it sat the guardian of the wild world, someone who is partially human, partially animal, but someone who had great compassion. And just being in the presence of that tree, in the presence of that beautiful landscape, in the presence of that being who accepted me as I was, who didn't look at me and sort of think, oh, she's not perfect yet. No, we don't want her here. There was none of that. It was a sense of being welcomed and of belonging.
I wonder also about the role of the feminine in all of these myths of Paradise Lost. I mean, certainly in the Garden of Eden story, it's the interpretation for many years has been it was all Eve's fault. But another lost paradise myth that has become very popular with feminists in more recent years is the story of Avalon, the lost island of the women adepts, the women sorceresses.
Well, that's one way, but I don't think we've ever lost Avalon. As someone who lives in Britain, I would say I don't think we ever lost Avalon. Well, you know, you would only have to walk down any street here in Oxford and ask someone where King Arthur was, and they say, well, he's ready to come back any time we need him. You know, he is not dead. Long live the king, he is not dead. He will come again. Everyone knows that here.
Well, that suggests the kingdom of paradise is just there waiting for you, and it'll emerge any day.
But, you know, Avalon is a realm of apples again. It's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, the fruit in the Bible isn't specified as being an apple, but of course, traditionally, it has become so in iconography and so on. But the realm of Avalon is the realm of apples, and it's guarded by nine women who are otherworldly women. And this is part of a very long Celtic tradition of the other world. You know, the sort of the deeper understanding of this is that, you know, the divine feminine has many different faces, but the faces that it takes within the realm of Avalon are of like nine muses who have different functions, who can heal, who can create, who can generate, who can do very many different things, raise winds, shapeshift, and that people visit these places in order to find these skills and gifts. And I feel that this story is very much about the way we ourselves weave between the worlds. Very many stories talk about, for example, about a man lying on his bed and suddenly in his sleep an otherworldly woman comes to him and she shakes a silver branch at him. And the silver branch is a sort of like a branch that's come from the otherworldly tree and it plays the musical bells over him. And he passes into a state that is beyond tears, that is beyond sleep, that is beyond laughter, although it has all those three gifts too.
That's beautiful.
And says, come, arise, you know, come into the land of women, find what is waiting for you.
Kathleen, for people who are not perhaps ready to begin shamanic journeying on their own, and who yet have, who resonate when you talk about that hunger, that longing, is there anything else that people can do to begin to get back a sense of that paradise that's lost?
Well, I think that a very laudable way of doing this and a way that everyone can do is to honour the land that they live in and those who live on and around it. I can think of no better way to honour paradise than to actually recognise that it's not just an inner state. And we all have a very deep longing and love of the countryside. I mean, the land itself is everything that is holy. There is no holier place than the earth. All that is made is holy. If we live with that in our minds and our hearts, then we find the proper respect with which we treat the land, we treat animal, plant, and human life with that respect, as though we were all inhabitants of paradise.
Kathleen Matthews is a Celtic scholar and folklorist in Oxford, England. Her books include Singing the Soul Back Home, Sophia, Goddess of Wisdom, and Celtic Book of the Dead. she spoke with Anne Strangechamps.